Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not forbid them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." That is Mark 19:13. I'm Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today for episode 230 of our Orphans No More podcast. We are here to serve you by inspiring you and encouraging you along the journey. And I'm so excited to have you joining us today. And I'm thrilled to introduce our returning guest. The award-winning Dr. Sharon Ford is the program director for foster care and adoption for Focus on the Family, where she helps raise awareness of the need for adoptive families to provide loving and stable homes for more than 100,000 waiting children in the U.S. foster care system. Welcome back to Orphans No More, Dr. Ford.
Well, good morning, Sandra. Thank you for having me back on your program. I greatly appreciate it.
It's an honor to have you back on here with us. And I really wanted to talk to you about something, a big event that occurred on June 24th, 2020. President Trump issued an executive order on strengthening the child welfare system for America's children. And we're going to post a link to the executive order in the show notes for this podcast episode, as well as the corresponding blog post. But for now, I want to read the purpose statement at the beginning of the order and then get some questions. I'm going to ask you some questions on that and get your input on it. So the order starts out saying, "Every child deserves a family. Our states and communities have both a legal obligation and the privilege to care for our nation's most vulnerable children." Now it goes on to say, "The best foster care system is one that is not needed in the first place. My administration has focused on prevention strategies that keep children safe while strengthening families so that children do not enter foster care unnecessarily." And then it cites some good news. It says last year, and for only the second time since 2011, the number of children in the foster care system declined. And for the third year in a row, the number of children entering foster care has declined. Then it lists some challenges that still remain, and these we're going to discuss. It says, "Too many young people who are in our foster care system wait years before finding the permanency of family. More than 400,000 children are currently in foster care. Of those, more than 124,000 children are waiting for adoption. Even worse, too many young men and women age out of foster care, having never found a permanent stable family. In recent years, approximately 20,000 young people have aged out of foster care each year in the United States. Research has shown that young people who age out of foster care are likely to experience significantly increased life challenges. 40% have experienced homelessness, 50% were unemployed at age 24. 25% experienced post-traumatic stress syndrome, 71% became pregnant by age 21. These are acceptable outcomes. So having read all of that, and again, we'll post it for our listeners to be able to read that for themselves. Dr. Ford, how does this new executive order help youth that are aging out of foster care?
I think that that's really an important question, because as we are just still going through this pandemic situation, one of the clear calls to action that I saw and heard coming from the HHS, Health and Human Services at the federal level, was them meeting with a group of youth and youth who were in college, youth who had aged out of the foster care system, who were living on their independently, living on a stipend, living in a dorm, and some of them, unfortunately, homeless. But their voices needed to be heard, because this pandemic was impacting them hugely. And so what about kids who don't have a safety net? And so one of the things that the executive order does it focuses states to remember about, don't forget about these kids. Mm. Don't forget about them. And that states should address a plan, develop plans so that these young people can access every federal benefit and resource that's out they're eligible for, and that states should help them, not just not let them figure it out, but states should help them navigate that system of filling out this form or getting these papers in, that's the role of state government, local county government, child welfare in helping to helping these children who don't have a safety net of family.
Yeah, 20,000 kids a year aging out. That's a significant number of young people who really need supports because, like you cited, you know, children, young folks who are in college, living in dorms, things like that. And when the pandemic hit and schools closed, where do they go? They don't have a family to go home to.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wish I had an answer about where do they go.
Yeah.
I mean, some kids have, young people have been able to make friends with folks from school. And so their friends from school said, come, my parents said, it's okay for you to come to our house.
Yeah.
So some of these kids couch surfed. Some of these kids went back to unsafe situations.
Yeah.
And some of these kids are very, very much in debt because they got a credit card and, you know, stayed at places that, you know, and spent money that they didn't have to spend.
Yeah. And then the unknown for the fall, and we've heard many colleges are going to do online, all online, at least for the fall semester. So even where does that put kids who don't really have a home, and distance learning, online learning may not really be the best option for them. So these are kids that really need supports, state, federal, and the church wrapping around them as well, which kind of brings me to my next question. The executive order cites several factors that have contributed to the number of children who wait in foster care for extended periods. So I want to read part of that and then discuss it. It says, first, state and local child welfare agencies often do not have robust partnerships with private community organizations, including faith-based organizations. Second, those who step up to be resource families for children in foster care, including kinship, guardians, foster parents, adoptive parents, they may lack adequate support. And then the third factor addresses the bureaucratic barriers that make it difficult for children and families to get the help they need. But I'd like to talk about the first factor, the need for child welfare agencies to partner with faith-based organizations. My organization, Justice for Orphans, implemented Care Portal here in upstate New York less than 2 years ago. And in the two Capital Region counties that we serve so far, churches utilizing our Care Portal platform have served over 900 local kids. Many of the requests filled by local congregations have helped prevent children from entering foster care, have stabilized biological families or strengthened kinship families, or helped to make foster placements. Care Portal is active in 20 states nationwide. I know you're very aware of the work of Care Portal. We brought it to New York. Dr. Ford, how do you see faith-based organizations like Justice for Orphans, like Care Portal, and many others out there, how do you see them playing a role in transforming the foster care system?
Well, you know, it's interesting that government says that they do prevention. And it, technically they do, but I can tell you that communities are by far the biggest prevention provider. When you look at the number of churches across the nation, the number of churches that have childcare as a part of their ministry to their community, the church as a faith-based community partner is right there, you know, in River City, your backyard, my front yard, and they are able to touch people in a quicker, more expeditious, more meaningful, deeper manner than government can or should. And so this executive order is saying, hey, state government, hey, local government, are you really partnering with all the partners? Don't turn a blind eye to the church because they're the church. Mm. They're the community. Yeah. They're there to serve. They want to be able to be a good partner to you and with you if you would only let them. Mm. And this executive order says, don't neglect that which can help you do your job effectively.
Yeah. And we saw recently, we just heard a story from one of our partnering churches using Care Portal. About a year ago, they were able to meet a need. The mom of the three children was very receptive to, she recognized her need for relationship, for she was just drawn to the church. So she became an active member of the church. The church really wrapped around her and her family, and she was thriving for a time, and then unfortunately fell back into some addiction and had to go to rehab. But this time, instead of the children going back into foster care, because that was originally part of their need, mom got her kids back, but needed some help with beds and things. So that's how the church first got involved. A little over a year later, mom, you know, was in this situation again, and she was needing to go away to rehab. But this time, because the church had wrapped around her family, the children didn't have to go into foster care. They actually stayed with a family within the church. They were able to stay in their school. They didn't have to move around and be divided up even. So for us, that's what it's all about, building those relationships, wrapping around the families and stabilizing them and making that difference. So we see the value in partnering with local government and the churches and bringing everybody together, because it's all about the kids.
It is, Sandra. And you know, what you just talked about is the gift of hospitality. Mm. And the Bible is very clear to say that we're supposed to open up our doors, open our hearts, open our home, and serve others. Yeah. You know, I was just working on a message this weekend, last night, that I'm going to preach this coming Sunday virtually. And it's about, are you a good neighbor? Mm-hmm. The family that took in those children while that young woman went to go to rehab, that's being a good neighbor.
Yeah.
And that's what the church, and that's what the faith community does, is we're good neighbors. Mm-hmm. We serve each other, and we serve our community so that government can do their role, and let the church and the community do their role.
Yes. Amen to that. Love that. So I read off some of those numbers that were, you and I are both familiar with. They're in that executive order, 400 children in foster care, over 100,000 of them waiting to be adopted. Those are gigantic numbers, but what about one family? What's the need look like for foster families? And does this executive order impact how states recruit those families?
You know, that's the other piece about the welcoming of faith-based organizations. Every single state around the nation has needs of more foster families. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know that a couple of years ago, the Family First legislation was passed. Yes. And when that legislation was passed, it said, keep kids out of residential facility. Mm-hmm. That's not where they live. That's not where they belong. That's mm-hmm. not where they age out from. That is a place where they go to get some treatment needs for a short period of time. But if they need to continue to have support outside of their birth family's home, it should be in a family-like setting.
Yeah.
So having more foster families is critical. And then having foster families have therapeutic level of services, that means they need more training. That means they need more supports to take care of children who've experienced traumas, but they can be safely be maintained in a family-like setting. Mm-hmm. And so if you're working with the faith-based organizations, like 4Kids in Florida, like I'm sure there's tons of them in New York, all across the nation, there are licensed faith-based child placement agencies that recruit families every single day to do what? Serve the children. And you know what they also do? They serve the birth family and supporting them, walking alongside them, mentoring them so that they can get their children back again. Because if the church doesn't know anything, they know about a saint is just a sinner who fell down, yeah, but got back up again. Mm. And who better to walk alongside a family who's fallen down, yeah, than somebody who's been, who knows that from a personal level with their relationship with God.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. And I know here where I am in upstate New York, there really are not very many, if any, faith-based organizations that are placement agencies. There are nonprofit placement agencies and there are county agencies. And over the years, our organization has been all about coming alongside. We're a voice to the church to rally them, to bring their attention to the need for good foster families for children. And that, you know what, we need to also come alongside and, you know, be that light and love on our county partners, our county caseworkers and the other agencies, because we all are on the same team. We are all about providing for these children who need families. So we've, you know, here where there's not actually a faith-based, I know in other states, there's Faith Bridge and different organizations like that. There's nothing like that up here in New York, but our organization has been for years a voice to the church to get involved and to come alongside. So we've, you know, especially in the two counties that we're working in with Care Portal, we've done caseworker appreciation days and different things to just really build relationships and love on them, because we want to lift their weary hands, because it's a hard, as you know, from being, you know, your career is in child welfare. We want to come alongside and encourage, and we're a voice to the church to, you know, it's important to step up and work with our county agencies and be, you know, provide homes for families. So we are all about that. My next question for you involves the data. The executive order addresses a whole lot of data. And I know, you know, some folks, myself included, can start reading all of that information and kind of zone out. But the executive order addresses collecting and reporting data. Why is that important?
You know, just like you were talking, Sandra, about how many children are in foster care in the United States, over 400,000. How many children are available for adoption today? Over 100,000. That's part of the data, yeah, that states are responsible to collect and share back with the federal government, so that Congress knows that information. Your elected officials know that information. So reporters know that information. You know what? And so you know that information. Mm-hmm. No, there's not 400,000 kids in your backyard, but in upstate New York, there's a number. What's your number? Every community has a number. And if we're going to have more than enough foster homes, mm-hmm, if we're going to have families for the children who are available for adoption in your jurisdiction, we need to know how many children are waiting. And so we need to also know how many foster families are out there, yeah, in your community. So if you know how many foster families you have, then you need to, that'll tell you how many more you need. Mm. Okay. If you, the law says that states should recruit families that look like the population of families that live in their communities. So if I'm, as a recruiter in my state, I need to know how many African-American foster parents we have, how many Hispanic, how many Asian, how many Native American, what faiths of people do we have, so that as we're looking at doing good placements for children, we have families who are fostering, who look like the families who are coming into, whose children need supports and services, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that having data does is it tells us, are we doing a good job or bad job? Because retention tells everything. If you can't retain foster parents after you've brought them in, you've got a retention problem. You're not going to know that if you're not watching the numbers.
Right.
Okay. And if you're recruiting, how many folks are you recruiting? If you had an event and 50 people came to the event, but only one person moved forward. Well, if you're not tracking that, you don't know that. And so knowing the data helps you to inform you about how you should change what you're doing, okay? Get input, seek more input from others about what you're doing. It also tells us about the average length of stay for kids. You know, 100,000 kids in foster care who are available for adoption. How long have they been waiting for a forever family? 5 years? 6 years? That's an indictment on the system. You know, is it because of lack of services? Well, if you don't have the information, how can you go and talk to your legislature? How can you go and talk to your communities and say, we need rehab, and it needs to be not 5 hours away, it needs to be an hour away.
Right.
Or we need this many more churches engaged in wrapping around foster families, because those foster families, they need someone loving on them, supporting them, nurturing them while they're caring for somebody else's children. But if you're not looking at the numbers, you don't know. And what you don't know will bite you.
Yeah. And one of the things that we learned here and what we're doing is, of course, those big numbers can seem paralyzing, right? What can we do about 400,000 children in foster care? We've dialed it down. So here in the Capital Region, in the Capital County, I don't have the exact number handy, but I know it's about 3,000. I believe it was in 2018, there was a little over 3,000 calls to Child Protective Services. So while not every one of those calls resulted in children being removed from home, every one of those calls does represent a family in crisis. And those are the families that the church can wrap around and become that preventative support so kids don't have to go into the system. So it's important to know the numbers in your own community, in your own county. Takes a little bit of digging around online, but I found in New York, I have access, I can dig around, and I know I can access that information for every county in my state. So when we're speaking in churches in different counties, we know the numbers there. We know the number of kids in foster care. We know the number of children that were placed for adoption, say. So those numbers are really, really important, because I love what you said. It's not just about an open bed. When a child comes into care and the caseworkers have to make those calls to find a foster place home to take them, we don't want just the first family that can say yes or where there's an open bed. We want an optimal placement so that child has the greatest success. And those numbers, the data is going to help us to be able to determine that. So those numbers are important, even if you're not even if you're not really a number person. I'm a word person, but I get it. It's very, very important. Now, I did want to point out this, because here in New York, I've been learning a lot about something called Family First. So on February 9, 2018, I believe it was, President Trump signed into law, so this was a couple of years ago now, the landmark bipartisan Family First Prevention Services Act. I'm going to just read a little bit of the jargon here. As part of Division E in the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, Family First includes long overdue historic reforms to help keep children safely with their families and avoid the traumatic experience of entering foster care. Emphasizes the importance of children growing up in families and helps ensure children are placed in the least restrictive, most family-like setting appropriate to their special needs when foster care is needed. So the Family First Prevention Services Act redirects federal funds to provide services to keep children safely with their families and out of foster care. And when foster care is needed, it allows federal reimbursement for care in family-based settings and certain residential treatment programs for children with emotional and behavioral disturbances requiring special treatment. So Family First includes, and I'm just going to do two bullet points, long overdue federal investments in prevention for children at risk of foster care. We've been talking a lot about that. And federal funds targeted for children in foster family homes or in qualified residential treatment programs or other special settings. So say all that to say, Dr. Ford, what are your thoughts on the Family First Prevention Services Act? Because that kind of came before this executive order.
I mean, it's really clear that the Family First Prevention Services Act was focused on stopping the warehousing of kids in residential facilities. And that's critical. That's no different than putting a child in an orphanage. Right. And giving 24-hour care in shifts. Mm-hmm. Children need families. They need family-like settings to thrive. We want them to grow up to be productive citizens. We want people investing in them. When you're when you're in shift work, you know, you're there just for your shift. Where's the relationship? Right. And folks leave. and so kids need to be in family-like settings. They're in school with their peers, in the community where there's interaction. And the Family First Prevention Services said, let's keep kids, first of all, with their families. Mm-hmm. What does that birth mama and birth papa, what do they need?
Yeah.
What shoring up can we do to keep those kids in home? Okay, if we can't keep them in home, what about grandma, you know, auntie? Yeah. What do they need to keep those children in the family, in the community, so that they're connected? And so critical, so critical. And so if we can't keep them with a family member, can't keep them with the birth family, can't keep them with the extended family, then what about using kin care and those folks who are, you know, have deep relationships with that child, a godmother, someone from the church, maybe it's the youth pastor and their family, you know, so that those children still are going to their same school, have their same support systems in place, have their same relationships in the community, that is so critical. Because you know what? Government isn't trying to get any bigger. It doesn't need to get any bigger. It needs to stay at a certain size to do the effective work that it does. Remember, child welfare is about safety. It's yeah. not about growing a big system. And so it also, I think the Family First Prevention Act said, who have you not been working with that you need to be working with? And I think that the executive order went on to echo that, to say, we're putting our money where our mouth is. You can put money to this. We support you doing that. And so it's these two federal initiatives that are saying, state and local government, we want to equip you to do the best job that you can, but know that it means working with your community, with your businesses, the marketplace, working with your faith community, working with nonprofits, because that's where all the work is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen in a state office.
Yeah. That's so true. And as a mom of four children adopted internationally that all came out of orphanages, group homes, orphanages, institutions, they are not a place to raise a child. They're, you know, my children experienced no nurture, especially the littlest ones, you know, those first developmental and formative years, those first 5 years, they did not receive nurture. It's like living in a cold, sterile school type environment without the educational part of that. So those are not places. And even though in the United States, we don't technically have orphanages anymore because we have the foster care system, like you mentioned, these facilities, these group homes and residential treatment facilities, they're not the best place for children. I do believe there are probably a very small number of children for safety and for different reasons that don't do well in a family setting.
Yes.
But by and large, most children would thrive in a family setting. So I love how you're storing up the biological and kinship families.
We don't want the foster care system to be the pipeline to the prison system.
Exactly.
Okay. So being in a family-like setting, being connected to your community, having ownership as a young child, giving back, being attached to caring, loving adults, and them being attached to you, is about accountability to each other. It's about relationship. As you, I love it how you relationship is key to everything that you talk about, and it's key for our kids.
Yes. Yeah. And I heard one adult adoptee. He was in foster care as a kid, and he has said every child is just one caring adult away from success, and that one caring adult can make a life-changing difference in the life of a child in foster care.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. So such good stuff. And I love your you mentioned how foster care is not the pipeline to the prison system, because so many times that we see that data is out there that so many young men and women in our prison systems have spent some time in foster care as a kid. So again, that loving family support and nurture can make all the difference in preventing that from being true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Such good stuff, Dr. Ford. As we wrap up, and I'm sad to be saying it's about time to wrap up, but any last thoughts? What's on your heart? What do you want our listeners to really hear and take away from our conversation?
Thank you, Sandra, for, again, having me on your program today. I think that if my closing thoughts are these. Everyone should have their mind and spirit open to what is God saying to them about how they can make a difference. And all of us have gifts and talents. And just life is a continuum. It's a journey. Where would God have you step in to on this journey and make a difference in the life of a child and make a difference in the life of a family who's, been struggling? Is it with prayer? Gosh, thank you. Thank you that you would take time to pray for struggling mamas, struggling dads, struggling kids. Could you cook a meal? Can you go and help someone clean? You say, well, not during this COVID time, I can't. I was like, okay, we'll pack a picnic basket and drop it off at a foster parent's home. And leave it on the porch, ring the doorbell, stand on the edge of the driveway and say, just wanted to be a blessing to you guys. Here's a picnic, for you to have in your backyard. Whatever it is that you can do, write a card. You mentioned earlier the workers, words of encouragement. Our workers, our caseworkers have been on the front line during this whole pandemic, and they will continue to be on the front line as we hopefully walk through this pandemic. They serve every single day. Please lift up their arms in prayer. Please lift them up with a card, a word of encouragement. Their work is hard. And then they come home to their own families. So if you could love on them, send a basket of fruit, send chocolate goes big in child welfare typically. You say, well, they're not coming into the office. Well, okay, we'll send a card. They are coming in to get some paperwork, so that they can go back home and do work. But they are still going out to making sure that children are safe. They're still going out and working with families who are thinking about being tomorrow's foster parent, tomorrow's adoptive parent. And so just keep them in your thoughts, keep them in your prayers, and know that you can do something. All you have to do is ask God, God, where would you have me step in? What is the something that you would have me to do? Because I want to be faithful to you, God. And he'll cover them and he'll protect them in their journey as they love and be a good neighbor.
Oh, I love that. Dr. Ford, as always, it's been an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Sandra, thank you again. Greatly appreciate you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening today. We learned a lot of very important information, which will help all of us moving forward as we are passionate about serving children and families in crisis. I'm thrilled to be the Area Director of Care Portal here in New York. As I mentioned earlier, we implemented Care Portal a year and a half ago. So far, nearly 1,000 local children in crisis have been served by about 18 churches who partner with us. More churches means more children served. So if your church would like to be part of transforming the foster care system, like we talked about today with Dr. Ford, partner with us, enroll your church into Care Portal. You can learn more and actually enroll at careportal.org. Our participating churches have helped prevent hundreds of local children from entering foster care. We've provided supports for biological, kinship, and foster placements, and all of them have made life-changing connections with the struggling families. So just everything that Dr. Sharon Ford was talking about, everything in our conversation, really partnering with us in Care Portal will help you and your church be able to really transform lives and have an impact on the foster care system. So far, we have brought Care Portal to both Albany and Schenectady counties here in upstate. And we have a goal to launch in the other 9 Capital Region counties, but we need your help to make that happen. You can become one of our Care Portal churches. Another way is to help through our 2-part fundraising extravaganza, which I mentioned last week. So just to give you a little heads up about that, first, on Friday, July 31st, so just coming up in a very short time, we are hosting a Christian comedy evening at Liberty Church in Schenectady, New York. This event is free. CDC guidelines will be strictly followed, and all of that means that there's limited capacity, so we really just want adults only. This event will be professionally recorded, so if you come, you'll get to be part of our live studio audience. Fun, fun, fun. And the recording of that event will be part of our virtual fundraiser that will go live on Facebook and YouTube on Thursday, September 17th. The event will be live on our event page for several days after. So if you don't actually catch it live on September 17th, you'll get to watch it if you so choose by, I think, midnight that Sunday evening. So like I said, it's a 2-part fundraising extravaganza. If you'd like to join us for the evening of comedy on July 31st, go to our website, justicefororphansny.org, to register. Registration is required due to the limited seating capacity. And please join us online for the virtual fundraiser. Maybe you'd like to be a watch party host. Invite your friends and family to come over to your house or to come to your church and watch the comedy show. Learn about Justice for Orphans and Care Portal. We're going to be doing some giveaways. We have some t-shirts and some books and different things. You can make a donation to support this ministry. Mark your calendar again. That is Thursday, September 17th for the virtual event. All of the details you can find on our website at justicefororphansny.org. And please keep both events in prayer. Our team could really use the prayer. It's a huge step of faith. It's a ton of work, but we really believe this is the direction the Lord is leading us in. So thank you again for listening to episode 230 of Orphans No More. If you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe and leave a review, and please share it with your friends on your social media. We really, really appreciate that. And of course, let us know, let us hear from you. We love it when we get feedback from our listeners, when we get an email, when you just drop a line and let us know how this show has impacted you, how it has inspired you. You can contact us through the website, or you can email me directly at Sandra Flack, that's F as in Frank, L-A-C-H, J-F-O at gmail.com, and also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Stay tuned to the podcast and our social media for news about the release of my Orphans No More book, A Journey Back to the Father. And I promise it is coming this fall. I know I keep inching it out there a little further, but it is a lot of work. I could use your prayer for that as well. So thanks again for listening today. We look forward to being with you next time here on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.